JC Corcoran Podcast.
And now, in a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullshit happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one f***ing reason. Others say it's because of some other f***ing reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some f***ing guy.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Tuesday, February 7th, 2023. Only 8 more days of those beautiful baseball fields all over the state of Florida and Arizona. They're going to be populated with the boys of summer. How you doing, kids? It's JC, still fighting off the remnants of the whatever it was that got me. I don't know what it was. You know, it started as a sore throat for 2 days and then went into my head and then just knocked me on my ass for 3 days last week. And those were just the 3 days that I was like in bed without any, you know, the energy of any kind. It just felt awful. Lost a couple of pounds, the whole thing. And there's very few people right now who don't have a little bit of something or aren't getting over a little something that they had. Something nice about the idea of getting something that won't, you know, potentially kill you. Back to the old days, going back 3 years, where you could just get sick and not have to worry or not, you know, whether or not you're going to end up on a ventilator. All right, just a reminder that the podcast time will be changing. I'm almost positive that the new time is going to be 11 a.m. I'm pretty sure of that. And again, this all has to do with the fact that I'm going to have to channel some efforts starting in a couple of days here for the launch of the new radio station. We will have information for you in a couple of days on that. And again, there's a lot of people asking a lot of questions. And it's like we were just still not in a position to sort of unload this whole thing. But it's coming, and it's coming very, very soon. I can tell you that. And I think I said it yesterday. I'm going to say it again. I think this is truly the first really sort of new type of radio station in the St. Louis market in probably 30 years. I will tell you this. If you remember back in 1985, for those of you who were around for it, there was a little radio station coming out of Illinois that was at 101.1. It's where 101.1 ESPN is now. But back in the day, it was a sort of a low-powered FM coming out of the Oblate Ministry over Our Lady of Snows, and Close had left Keiji, and he went over to KWK. That didn't work out, and so he and a couple of people put this radio station on the air in Illinois, and for a while it was getting a lot of attention, even though it was very, very inconsistent. You know, sometimes you'd be listening and go, what the fuck are they playing? What is this? But at least it was a little on the different side, and people were willing to maybe sit through a song or two that they didn't recognize or didn't like to be able to hear something that was like, oh, I love that song. Nobody plays it anymore. So if you sort of approach it with that mentality, you'll be on the right track. And I think a lot of people are going to be very, very happy about this. We have the Soulard Pet Parade and also Super Bowl Sunday coming up this week. We will do the football show on Friday, and the weather, by the way, for the weekend for the Soulard Pet Parade, partly cloudy and 55 degrees. There have been some of those Mardi Gras things down in Soulard where I've just about frozen my nuts off. So partly cloudy and 55 sounds good. Only about 28% of Americans say they plan to watch at least some of tonight's State of the Union address. Biden is expected to call for a minimum tax rate for billionaires. It sounds like the Republicans will nix that idea. Paul Pelosi is going to be in the crowd tonight. Bono is going to be in the crowd tonight as guests of the Biden administration. And all you have to do is just watch a little bit about the way they do things, especially at the beginning. It'll explain everything that's wrong with our political system. It's like high school. If high school were a bunch of old men instead of young boys and girls, but there is such a tribal, you know, herd mentality, and you got one bunch sitting on the one side, they don't clap, and then the other bunch sitting on the other side, and they don't clap at the same stuff the guys across the aisle clap at. You got that little dude who screams, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States! And then he comes walking up the aisle, and people are shaking his hand. He walks up to the podium, and they just start cheering like crazy for like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. The Republicans all sit there with their arms folded, you know, and they get a shot of Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, all the kids that ate paste in grade school that you remember. Yeah, they all grew up and they're all in Congress right now. And then after that big, you know, expression of genuine love and affection for the President of the United States, he says, hi. And then they all get up and they do it again. And then, you know, and Biden talks for like an hour and a half. And one of the big questions about tonight's speech, by the way, is whether or not he's going to turn this into what will, in essence, sound more like a campaign speech for 2024. I don't know how you feel about it. I don't really talk much politics anymore because there's no point in it. Nobody's listening. Nobody cares. Everybody's got their... See, this is why I don't talk politics, because I can't even figure out any way to talk about why I don't talk about politics. It's how fucked up everything is. These videos coming out of the country of Turkey are enough to just scare the living bejesus out of you. And I don't know if it was because, well, I think it was a 7.8 earthquake, and I don't know if it was because of that or because the building codes they have in countries like Turkey are looser, but, you know, to be standing there, they're like watching, you know, high-rise, well, not high-rise, but, you know, like 10, 15-story buildings just, you know, crashing down, everybody getting killed. But I'll tell you this, you talk about a country that I've never felt any compulsion whatsoever to visit, and that's Turkey, because I saw Midnight Express. if you've never seen the movie Midnight Express, watch it, and it will cure you of ever wanting to go into the country of Turkey, especially if you're carrying something with you shouldn't have. William has. They say that the buildings that are put up in this country, particularly in Southern California, are like, I don't know, say earthquake proof. But apparently the way they build them, you know, the sort of joints of the building, for lack of a better way of saying it, are built with some sort of a cushion in them. I don't know if they put springs in there or what. I don't know anything about construction. But, they say that if the world starts rocking, that these buildings are going to continue to stand. I'll believe it when I see it. And again, for everybody who knows this stuff, and that does not include me, but I know who to listen to get reliable information. But everybody basically says it's only a matter of time until that San Andreas fault just goes. And when it goes, California tumbles into the sea. That'll be the day I go back to Annandale. The other big story dominating the news, and you really do have to wonder what they're thinking, because the movie industry has not recovered from the pandemic. Theater traffic in the last year is down about, I think it's down 22%. That's a lot. And you got to remember, the movie theaters make absolutely nothing on showing the movie. Every dime they make is from things like the candy counter. Roger Ebert once said it was one of the funniest things, and at the same time, it was just brilliantly accurate. And he said that movie theaters, whether you're talking AMC or whatever, movie theaters are basically value-added candy and popcorn distributors. The movie is the value-added part. And once you understand that, then you understand why everything is so high-priced in movie theaters. But this is a head-scratcher, because especially from a standpoint of timing, if you have an industry that is struggling, you don't do something like this. This is like a self-inflicted gunshot wound. I don't know what they're thinking. I might even go, so I was thinking about this earlier today. I might even go so far as to predict that they're going to have to scrap this plan before it ever even goes into effect. There have been situations like that where somebody announces something and people are like, what the fuck? Get out of here. And they have to backpedal and go, okay, no, we were just making sure you were paying attention. No, we're not really going to do that. And they pull the policy before it ever gets instituted. And this might be one of these things, because people are just like rolling their eyes back in their head, go, well, if I ever was going to go to an AMC theater, I'm not going now. AMC is going to soon start charging different prices for movie tickets depending on where your seat is. Like if you're down in the first row where you got to, break your neck to look straight up and you're looking up into the nostrils of George Clooney that look like they're about 30 feet wide, those seats are going to be cheap. But if you want good seats, those are going to cost more. I don't even like the whole seat assignment thing. If I'm going to a baseball game, I understand it. But a movie theater, why can't I just walk into the theater, pick out a seat, and sit down and watch the movie? And AMC has lost their minds. Whoever came up with this idea should be fired on the spot. All right, we were talking about this a couple of months ago. And somebody calculated that if terrorists took out, I think it's about, they said 35 power stations around the country, 35, and they're not just indiscriminate. There are 35 specific locations of power stations. And again, the power companies, I guess they thought to themselves, well, we just want to keep people out of this area because you're talking about high voltage, and we put the high voltage signs up, but, kids in the middle of the night get goofy and they want to scale the fence and go, so you got the barbed wire around everything. It's just dangerous. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't protect the power station from somebody who wants to do something to it from the outside, like with a gun or a bomb or just some sort of explosive or whatever. And this is what domestic terrorists are doing. And they have calculated that if they took out 35 key power stations, it would sink the entire United States continent into darkness. And this, goes back to this thing we were talking about. For all the talk there is, and especially with politicians, about terrorism. Got to seal up those borders. You know why? Because the terrorists are coming in and they're going to blow you up. In the meantime, sort of turns out that that's not who we should be worried about. It's our own citizens. Our lovely, frustrated, disillusioned, disappointed American citizens who feel like it's their self-appointed duty to fuck up the country or kill somebody or blow something up or maybe a combination of all of it. It's our own people we should be afraid of. And apparently they just foiled a big one. This one in Baltimore was apparently going to be a big one because these things are all connected. And I know you'll find this difficult to believe. They don't seem to be deterred by a chain link fence and some barbed wire. Beatles arrived in America on this date back in 1964. You may recall, for those of you who are real Beatlemaniacs, that George Harrison was sick on the trip. There's a shot of them at rehearsal, and the guys are all, you know, sort of dressed casually, but George Harrison has his big turtleneck on, and I guess it came close to him not even being able to perform on the Ed Sullivan Show a couple of days later. But he did make it, and the rest is history. It's interesting that this would dovetail this way, because I've told this story before. Please indulge me here if you've already heard me talk about it. Because it, in addition to the Beatles arriving in America on this date, 1964, in 1996, I got a call from Robert Morton, otherwise known as Morty, the producer for Late Night with David Letterman. He said, okay, Dave has picked out a couple of reporters in a couple of cities. We're going to invite you to New York to come up to the Ed Sullivan Theater and interview Dave one-on-one for television. And so, do you want to do it? And I said, hell yeah. And I had interviewed Dave before on the phone and via satellite. And this was the first time we were going to actually meet face-to-face. So I fly into New York, and Dave doesn't let anybody from the industry be in the audience for the show. So they stuck me in his office. Yes, complete with the pencils stuck into the acoustic paneling in the ceiling. And so I watched the show on the monitor from there, and surprisingly quickly, and I mean within 5 minutes after he's like, thanks for watching, good night, everybody, he's out of that suit into some sweatpants and an athletic jersey, and, you know, all right, boom, let's go. And it was supposed to be a 10-minute interview. We ended up going almost 25 because we were laughing. And Morty kept sticking his head and like, are you guys done yet? Are you guys done yet? But it was a lot of fun. We had some big laughs. And well, this is one of the clips from that interview.
Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought somewhere along the line you had spent some time, maybe as a kid in college or something, coming through St. Louis?
It was a great experience for me. It was kind of a landmark experience. It was kind of one of those focusing moments in your life because to me, Gateway to the West actually meant something. Because in 1975, I loaded up my 1973 Chevrolet 3/4-ton pickup with all my earthly, worldly belongings and headed west on I-70. And when I got to St. Louis, it actually, crossing the river, it was actually, you know, kind of a moving, it was just like my gosh, here I am. I really am going west. And I that was the first time I'd been in Missouri. And I have to tell you, I was so impressed. Of all of the, there were three states that really impressed me making that journey. Missouri was the first one, because Indiana going west, it's flat, it's cornfield. And then you get into Missouri, and the eastern third of Missouri, beautiful, lush, rich, black, dark soil, and a nice rolling terrain. The topography is beautiful. And I can remember being captivated by, wow, this is the way Indiana should have been. Now, there are very nice parts of Indiana that are sort of like that, but Missouri was heartbreakingly beautiful. And then I was impressed also with Texas because of its enormity, just endless horizons. And then when we got to New Mexico, I mean, it really is the land of enchantment. And those three states really got my attention. And also Kansas kind of fools you, because for the first, 50, 60 miles of Kansas, it looks like Missouri. You think, well, this is great. And then, of course, the bottom drops out. And for the next 2,000 miles, it's just, wow, where? What is this? It's flat, and we're going 100 miles an hour here, and we still not making time.
By the way, I promise we won't go to their house or anything, but you have relatives in St. Louis, do you not?
I have, let me get this correct. I have a niece and her husband living in St. Louis. Yeah, they moved there from Cincinnati. They love it.
Well, you know, every performer has their ups and their downs, and I'm just going to take a wild guess and say the low point in your entire show business career came around 1980. Mary Tyler Moore variety show. They tried to make you learn how to dance.
Well, not only did they try, they made me dance. I was forced to dance. Actually, the low point is sitting here talking to you. But in 1980, you have to understand something. I had been in California for about 5 years, and nascent was how you would describe my desires and career in those days. It was just kind of showing signs of life. And I was hired for this, what was a very, at the time, prestigious opportunity, because Mary Tyler Moore was making her return to television. And it was in this hour comedy variety format, and it was right after 60 Minutes, and everybody thought, oh man, slick, start picking out property on the moon. This thing has got hit written all over it. And it was, on one hand, it was the most challenging and exhilarating summer that I spent. We worked all summer on the thing. And then on the other hand, it was the most anxiety-ridden and discouraging experience of my life, because I was asked to do things that you would think any novice in show business could do, sing and dance. And I can't sing, I can't dance, and every Wednesday we'd have to go up to the rehearsal hall, and the Tony Stevens, the choreographer, odd that I would remember this man's name, because he just tortured me. It was just, we were dancing. Not only were we dancing, we had costumes, we had ridiculous costumes, and we'd be singing. You know, and Mary Tyler Moore, you know, can dance in her sleep. She has to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the line. She's dancing. You know, 4:30 in the morning. She's, you know, foxtrot into the John. And it was just horrifying. It was humiliating. It was degrading. And I felt badly for her. And then it turned out that the show was so pitifully received that all of our hard work, I think we ended up taping like 13 shows in a summer. And then after the first one aired, I believe they pulled the plug on it. And then it came back in a different format. And
no Dave and no dancing.
No Dave and no dancing. I had been invited back. Michael Keaton went back. I was invited back. And a couple other cast members were invited back. But I said, no, that's, I'm sorry. I can't do it. And I can remember part of the deal was in settling up my contract, I got to keep my wardrobe. And for a guy who had no clothing, this was like fine. So I did that. And I always felt badly for Mary, because she deserved better than to have to, you know, deal with louts like myself who can't really do anything except sort of stand there and, hi, where are you from? Nice to see you. Is it a business trip or is that your wife? You know, that kind of crap.
Dave just tosses those non sequiturs around, and it's just so funny to be in his presence. But that's not actually where the story was going, because here's the thing. I think it was 2 years later is when somebody hatched this idea of, on Friday nights for like, I don't know, 6-8 weeks in a row, every Friday night there would be an entire audience from one city that made up the 488 seats in the Ed Sullivan Theater. So they did Indianapolis, they did New Orleans, and then, you know, it was our turn. We took 3 plane loads of people from St. Louis to New York, put them in the New York City Hilton, and then the police blocked off the streets right there in Midtown Manhattan, got a police escort into the place, saw the show, flew them home. Fantastic. So what I did, you know, I was shooting a TV story for this. So what I did, I said, can I get into the theater so that set up our cameras and everything, and get in there early so that when people come in from the lobby, we see them actually entering into the audience area. I want to get that shot. No, sure, you can have whatever you want. So we go in there. The theater is completely empty. Nothing's happened. I think Biff Henderson walked by at one point and just sort of looked at us like, huh. Just kept going. But while my cameraman set up, I was just taken by the wave of memories in that theater. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the place I saw George Carlin on television for the first time. Robert Klein, Jackie Mason, Topo Gigio, and of course, the Beatles. And I'm standing there in the front row. Now, in the front row, it's depressed. So, for example, if you had a front row seat and you decided to stand up, the stage would be at about your midsection. And I just reached out my hand and just put it on the surface of the floor of the theater and just had a moment all by myself there with my hand on the floor, thinking to myself, back in 1964, the entire world changed. That is not an exaggeration. You know, if you were there, you know that's not an exaggeration. The world changed with that first appearance of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show in February of 1964. And I was just overcome with emotion. I thought to myself, you know, backstage that night, one of the stagehands asked Paul McCartney, are you nervous? And he said, no. He said, well, you ought to be. There's 80 million people watching. See, we always hear those stories about big, big movie stars who have it in their contract that nobody is allowed to make eye contact with them or to speak to them unless they are spoken to first.
That's the reason why, right there. Because you got some 65-year-old stagehand who's been, you know, working the Ed Sullivan Theater for the last 50 years, and he, you know, says something, you know, that's stupid to Paul McCartney. But anyhow, all of that happening back in the late 1990s. But that trip to interview Dave was on this date back in 1996. In 98, I was in New York to see The Big Lebowski. I didn't get it then. I still don't get it. I have it on my DVR because they ran it on cable maybe a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to watch it again and see if it makes any more sense to me now than it did back then. It's just one of those movies that just did not connect with me. But I'm going to watch it again and see if there's something I missed. And back in 2001, my buddy Brian McKenna and I went over to the Ritz-Carlton. That's where model Kathy Ireland was waiting for us. We had a nice conversation with her. She was okay. She was not that interesting. She was not that friendly. It's not that she was unfriendly. It's just that she just didn't seem to have much to say to us, which when I think about it, I can totally I can totally understand. There's a picture we have, me and McKenna and Kathy Ireland. And again, don't get me wrong, she wasn't snotty to us or anything like that, but it was like, are we done? Can I go? All right, late night tonight, Christoph Waltz. For my money, one of the best actors working these days. My God, that scene in Inglourious Basterds when he's got the two guys tied to a chair and he's talking about the way to end the war tonight, and he's got the telephone right there. It's just, you know, remarkable stuff. Tig Notaro, too, one of the most unfunny people on the planet. James Corden has, and pay attention now, Jay Ellis, Kirby Howell-Baptiste, and Elon Gold. I guess I'm supposed to know who those three people are, but I don't. Reese Witherspoon on with Seth Meyers tonight. Evan Rachel Wood and Josh Gad will star in a murder mystery called The Adults. It's going to be directed by the pride of U City High School, Alex Winter. You know him from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And his brother plays along with our buddy Jeff Faulkner in the Mr. Blue Sky Band, the tribute to the Electric Light Orchestra. Dexter getting a prequel series called Dexter Origins. Also, Billions is getting multiple spinoffs, including Millions and Trillions. In case you missed it, Mick Fleetwood made a comment on the Grammys red carpet that he thinks Fleetwood Mac is done. Not surprised to hear that for obvious reasons. Questlove revealed that Will Smith was supposed to make a surprise appearance during the Grammys hip-hop celebration, but he had to start filming Bad Boys 4. We are not ready to see Will Smith again. Your timeout isn't over yet, Will. I'm sure it will be, you know, one of these days, but it's not there yet. You did a bad thing, man. You did bad. You got to sit out. And Tom Brady has revealed that his Fox Sports career is not going to start until the fall of 2024. Now, don't be surprised if on Sunday they work him into the Super Bowl coverage in one way or another. But as far as him actually being in the booth, fall of 24, which I think is a good idea because this job is probably harder than he thinks. He's going to need some training. Nobody's disputing that you're not the greatest quarterback of all time, but you have all those rings and trophies and stuff like that for playing football, not for talking into a microphone. All right, birthdays today. Ashton Kutcher, 45. Chris Rock, 58. Garth Brooks, 61. Eddie Izzard, 61. James Spader, he gives me the creeps, 63. Robert Smigel, Triumph, the insult comic dog, is 63. Back on this date, 1940. Well, I actually have a pretty good story about this because, let's see, my sister was born in 47. So when she was about, I don't know, it was probably maybe 3 or 4 years old, my dad takes her to see Pinocchio, which premiered in New York on this date, 1940. Okay, so this is a decade later. I'm like, oh, take her to the theater to see Pinocchio. And she's on the psychiatrist's couch today because of scenes in that movie. My dad had to remove her from the theater because she was screaming, no Nokio, no Nokio, after the little wooden creature encounters, shall we say, a hardship. Right? Blazing Saddles released on this date in 1974. Try something like that today. And Mike Tyson entered into the sacrament of holy matrimony with Robin Givens on this date back in 1988. They divorced on Valentine's Day the next year. And a website called studyfinds.com says the five best places to live in America, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Raleigh, North Carolina, Huntsville, Alabama, Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Colorado Springs, Colorado. And critics continue to blast the president for taking so long to shoot down that Chinese spy balloon, especially since Alec Baldwin was available. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Tuesday, February 7th, 2023, is in the can. 8 more days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. Again, the podcast continues to be in its regular time here just after 7 o'clock, but it will be moving starting next week, and we'll start filling you in on specific details of the new radio station very, very soon. That's how close we are. We live in exciting times. All right, we're here every weekday morning right about this time. You can email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com, Facebook, the Showgram with JC Corcoran. Have a great day. Talk to you in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.